Now's the time to save 30% on wedding jewelry, only on BlueNile.com. Make sure your wedding ring is the one with your pick of diamond and lab-grown diamond bands, all hand-finished and graded for excellence. Or surprise her with something blue she'll love for life, like a stunning pair of sapphire earrings. Blue Nile's jewelry experts are available 24/7 to help, from fit questions to style advice. Right now, get up to 30% off at BlueNile.com. BlueNile.com.
All right, welcome back to another episode of the Ricky Henderson Podcast, the greatest of all podcasts at GOAP. I'm your host, Alex Espinoza, with my co-host, Dr. Hot Dog, Hal Gordon.
Hot Dog.
And today's guest, we got a heavy hitter on the show. He's a host and executive producer of Foul Territory TV. His name is Scott Braun. Scott, how you doing, man?
Guys, I'm doing great. It's awesome to be on here. Obviously, you know I'm a devoted John Fisher hater and really open appreciation dude, not just for the team, but more for the fans. So pleasure to talk to you both.
I really appreciate it, man. Thank you, man. Well, yeah, I mean, I was going to ask about that. So you host a national show on Foul Territory TV. And before we get into the A stuff, I kind of want to just get into, your company, it's barely a year old now, right? You started last year, right? And it's been all over my timeline since you guys started. So, I mean, congrats on all the success. And how cool is it to kind of have, just see it grow like the way it has the past few months? And, you know, how did you get the idea to start it and everything, you know?
Thank you. No, I appreciate it. It's been awesome. Yeah, we're about a year and a few months in. So it launched at the WBC time period right before the season started last year. WBC already feels like 5 years ago, but it wasn't. But what I did was say, okay, if I'm a modern consumer and I'm obsessed with baseball, how would the modern baseball landscape look? Right? Like, I worked at MLB for years. If I scrapped this all down and built it back up my own way, like if you bought a house and said, okay, I want to build it my way, what would it look like? What would it sound like? Who would be involved? What would be your mission statement? Who would you interact with, right? Who would you talk to as a guest every day? Like, what would be your formats? And that's what we're doing here. So we started with Foul Territory. We have now built a network of shows that continue to launch. And we have local team shows like Dodgers Territory, Northside Territory, which is a Cubs pod, and the Braves podcast, Hammer Territory. But Foul Territory is there. Fair Territory is there. Foul is all about the player perspective. But to bring it to life with authentic baseball conversations, it's not just like, cool, players are the best. It's like, no, these are critics who will praise or critique anything. Players, teams, owners, rules, umpires, you name it. It should sound the way that it sounds if you were sitting at a dinner table with AJ Pierzynski and Eric Kratz and Todd Frazier and Adam Jones, and then even take it to the guest level, right? I want to be at that table when they're talking to Mike Trout and just be a fly on the wall and listen to what they would say. So that's what I think was created with the interviews. But then I also wanted it to sound like an entire baseball show and get your comprehensive news and authentic takes on a crazy play or a quote or a trade. Yeah. FT Senior Insider Ken Rosenthal does that. He breaks half the trades. So it's been a dream. It's been a faster rise and crazier run than I thought it would be, but I'm having by far the time of my life. This is my calling. And I loved what I did previously, but it doesn't touch what I'm doing now in any way, from schedule to people I work with to what we put out there.
That's awesome, man. That's great. Yeah. And what's it like to work with Trevor May? I mean, Trevor May was only with the A's for about a year, but he was brought on earlier this year. And, you know, he was always, even in that year, A's fans got to know him as just being hilarious. And what is he like to work with, and what has he brought to your guys' show, you know?
Exactly what you would expect, because the way that he acts publicly is the way that he acts when we're on a production call or we're just talking ball. Like, there's been a few times where we have a show and I text him because I'm excited about something that might be a little bit nerdier, like a little bit like more stat oriented or using some more advanced stats. And we'll go back and forth about it and be like, yeah, we gotta show the world what a dead zone fastball is. And, you know, I'll ask a player about it, one of our guests, and be like, oh, this player knew all about it, or this player calls it something else. So he's a cool baseball nerd, right? Because he's a monster. He's like 6'5", super athletic, super well-spoken, deep voice. But then he can absolutely nerd out with you on baseball stats and stories. But he also fits our motto of authenticity. And he hinted at things that were going weirdly when he was there. And as soon as he announced his retirement, he was like, okay, let's unveil some things going on here in Oakland. And I know that everyone appreciates that. So he's one of a kind. He's the superstar. He's great.
Scott, I don't exactly know your baseball background, but like you're like, you know, not an MLB player or anything. Ooh. It's so, you know, did you play in high school or nope?
I played Little League. So I played Little League. My farthest sport by far was basketball. I played through high school.
I grew up
to be a broadcaster at a young
age.
I was better at basketball. Yeah. I was more aggressive within that sport. I weighed a lot more than I did now, so I could bang down low and get some rebounds too. But to answer your question though, quick, I'm a host, right? I'm a host. I'm opinion. I'm the voice of the fan. I'm the point guard.
But in, you know, on a show that is the whole, like, sort of the hook of the show is that, like, you know, these are professional baseball players giving these like unvarnished truths. And this, you know, when you listen to your show, you really feel like you're learning something about being what conversations amongst professional ball players must be like. Like, what, I mean, I guess it's almost like the dream of like a fan's dream, where you get to just like end up hanging out with all these guys and becoming one of their confidants and stuff. What's that like? I mean, obviously the professionally, it's great that it's all working out, but you must pinch yourself sometimes being like, oh, I got these like ball players who just like calling me and want to just chat about stuff all the time.
Yeah, I'm not good at that. Like, I am decent at appreciating certain moments, but I'm not good at looking around and being like, damn, like, how cool is this? I'm in a room with 10 superstar baseball players and we're chatting ball. I it's not a lack of appreciation. I just get very much in a zone. What's my job? Yeah. What do I have to do? And I want to make sure that everyone else feels comfortable and taken care of. At the same time, I think it can be a blessing sometimes because I don't get lost in the moment where you're like, oh, crap, wait, I have a job to do. I have to get us to the next topic, or there's a guest waiting for us, or obviously it's a free show, so we have sponsors. So the overall coolness factor, I think, comes out when I am in person sitting at, you know, a Vegas poker tournament that we're doing for BetMGM, and we have our show and then we go play poker and I'm sitting with a bunch of my friends that are on foul territory. And then we go for dinner afterwards. Like, that's the cool part, right? Where you get to just hang out with them as people and hear stories. I would say the best part of being in baseball media over my entire career is getting the inside info. And whether that's info that can be shared publicly or not, it's just super cool to hear stories, right? I mean, that's what everybody loves. Like, when I was calling games more consistently on a national level and did like the YouTube game of the week for years, we would be in the manager's office, which is what any national broadcast does, and you get about 15-ish minutes with each manager. During that time of my life, that was by far my favorite part of the job, because you get to sit down with a manager off the record, and he's going to tell you some things you can use on the game broadcast, some things you can't. He's going to also tell you some things that you can use later on, like, hey, this dude's actually sick right now, and he's only probably going to give you 50 pitches, but don't talk about that until he's coming out later on, right? So it's really cool. That part, access wise, is awesome. We had production meetings where, you know, when I was at the league working at the TV network, and then we do that here too. And those meetings are fun, you know, every day, especially before the show, when we're going over what we make sure we want to talk about and who the guests are, you get stories mixed in there too. So that's the good stuff. That's why we all watch and have fun with this, right? Al, it's like, if you went to a bar with your buddy for the day and you wanted to watch a game and you're just hanging out, having a beer, talking about, you know, whatever you see authentically. That's the part that I didn't have for most of my life and career as an adult. Was I felt like I was an actor at times, because you work for a league. That's just what comes with it. And it's the same thing with a team. You guys see that more than probably any other team in baseball, right? If you're an A's employee, it is probably difficult to swallow your pride sometimes and be like, yeah, everything's great here. We used the Braves logo for a promo video, but everything's great.
Yeah. No, yeah, that was pretty brutal. Well, I mean, I've noticed like you've really paid close attention to this situation. I've seen you had the last dive bar shirts. I just want to let people know using my affiliate link down below. Use a promo code RickyBlog2 to get 10% off at lastdivebar.com. But and you were at Fans Fest. You're at Jack London Square when they had 15, 10, 20, 15, 20,000 people there. What about this A's fan story has attracted you, or like what do you think about it, and why have you connected with the A's fan base so strongly throughout this whole debacle, really?
Yeah, and I knew the A's just as much as I knew any other team as a kid because I'm from New Jersey. The one connection I can start with early on is this happened later in life, but I was a big New Jersey Nets fan. I was fans of all the New Jersey, New York teams, as you'd imagine, or some, right? You like some, you hate some of the others because we have multiples. But for example, when the New Jersey Nets moved to Brooklyn, I felt it. I didn't know that I would feel it as much as I did. And the situation going on in Oakland is way different. They weren't like quiet quitting or constantly picking on fans and doing every single thing wrong from an ownership perspective. They just moved. But I did feel like I lost the connection to the team. It hurt a lot of my fandom in general with the sport. I've actually since kind of picked up the Knicks because I lived in New York City for a long time, in Manhattan. So anyway, moving it over to the A's, I fell in love with the vibe of A's fans once I started working for the league. And I would be up late at night, often hosting Quick Pitch on MLB Network in the last game of the night's A's. And it's a walk-off half the time. The drums are roaring. All of the crowd shots are incredible. Like you felt that. And there were even fans that I worked with, because I worked with hundreds of people that were A's fans, and they were often my favorite people. And it wasn't just because they were A's fans, it was how they viewed the game, how open and nice they were, and how genuine they were. So I fell in love that way. And then finally, I worked for an independent company, or I helped to run one, right? And I'm on a show where we point out what's going on in baseball, good or bad, and we can bring out what the hell's going on in Oakland. So that was the last layer here of connecting with fans. And I try and make it more global for the game, because obviously we have more than A's fans that are watching and listening to the show. I said this when I was at Fans Fest on the stage. What's going on in Oakland is not just an Oakland problem. It is a baseball problem. We cannot let people operate this way. This is not what sports were built for. And from a business perspective, which some people love to focus on, it is terrible for business, the way that everything has been running. And I know you guys have talked about it a ton, but you're going to lose fans in one of the biggest markets in the country, and they will move on to other teams, other sports, et cetera, right? Like the Ballers and the Warriors, whatever,
Yeah,
right?
the
You're going
Oakland
to
roots. Yeah.
the Roots,
Yeah.
exactly. You are going to lose so many dedicated fans to our sport. And I get that teams need to move sometimes, but the way that this has been done has been disgusting. And we know that the Oakland A's should be in Oakland forever. So that's why my passion has lit up, and it keeps lighting up when I make a trip like that to Jack London Square for Fans Fest. And it's one of the career highlights for me, meeting everyone. Everything you see and read about is even more true when you have face-to-face conversations with the fans about what's going on. So the connection is strong for me, as strong as I can be. And I appreciate the A's fans for letting me help to be a voice for them and just welcoming me into their community. I think that all baseball fans should be that way. If we're calling something out, hopefully you support us calling that out if you feel the same way, and don't say, well, this is just our problem. You shouldn't comment about it. It should be like, no, we should all talk through this together because we're all sports fans at the end of the day.
I think what's really funny is that you're sort of describing that time where you came to FanFest and you actually met people in person. You got to hear the stories from people. I think what's interesting is I've ex you know I experienced the sort of the absolute the reverse of that, where for a long time there was just nobody's coming to the Coliseum. There's something just wrong with everything, blah blah blah. And then starting about 13 or 14 months ago when they committed to the Wild Wild West, whatever. It changed partly because of all the organizing that we've done, but also just because of how much they've just continued to debase themselves in all manners of dress. And just this week, randomly, it didn't break any news, but there was a column in the New Yorker which is, you know, the last place where I'd expect a, will the A's actually move to Las Vegas or not? You know, it's like, it's reached everywhere where it's become such a farce. And in that way, I think it has been incredibly validating for A's fans to hear, you know, not that we like, you know, not that people, you know, you need to be told that your fandom matters or that your community matters, but it was, I think it's incredibly validating to hear people like you and, you know, people from like who are nationally broadcasted to say like, hey, we get it. And these guys like don't deserve this and it's wrong. So, you know, it's been when this all sort of first happened, you know, when they said we're gone, it was just like, what do? You know, Alex and I like did like an emergency pod, we recorded it. And then after that, I was like, you know what, it's the only time I've ever done like a Twitter space. I was like, let's just do a Twitter space. And just people were just like crying basically, yeah. You know, it was just like, it was like 4 or 5 hours of just people just like crying to each other. But it, you know, it also like, nobody was imagining, well, we got to fight for the next 14 months. It was like, it's over. But you know, in the silver lining of such a dark, miserable storm cloud, I think, has been, you know, being able to come together as a community and sort of celebrate that and also, you know, fight as hard as we can and cause as much problems for them as possible. And you know, in that sense, it's been its own sort of reward. Yeah. And just kind of fun and silliness, too. Because, you know, also like the thing that always kills me, you know, my wife told me this once, you know, maybe like 6 months ago or something when I was just, you know, storming around the house or stomping around the house. And she's like, you know, baseball is supposed to be fun.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, fuck.
Not yeah. a battle. Right?
Yeah. So, you know, I think it's its own reward and it's been its own fun almost off the field. As a baseball fan now, just being, I had a tremendous amount of time, a fun time just watching. I was texting back and forth with Brian, Sandlot Brian, when he was sending you guys $10 donations when you had Brody on YouTube, being like, come to Fans Fest, come to Fans Fest, knowing that you wouldn't know what that is, but Brody would. And it's just, you know, it's just like all these kind of shenanigans, like watching people with the 68s and Last Dive Bar do their shenanigans. And that's, I don't know. I don't have a question.
I actually have a question. I mean, it's not totally based off what you're saying, but I always want to educate as much as possible because I'm not there all the time. So when you see the news about Sacramento pop up, what is the first thing that comes to mind? And I'll ask like some follow-ups to mix into that. If the A's don't end up pulling off Las Vegas, is Sacramento looked at as a total fail or like, oh, I can get there a little bit easier and maybe also ownership will change eventually? That's like one layer. The other layer to me that I still haven't gotten a great explanation on is, didn't the Kings almost move out of Sacramento? Mm-hmm. And now we have a city nearby that's stripping away a team and helping to give them a life raft to put a team there, which I'm sure, I don't know the guy at all, Vivek or whatever. Mm-hmm. I'm sure he's pretty bright. And I know he's probably got 80 business deals with John Fisher on the side for other things. He might have an inkling that he might be able to pull off owning a franchise in Sacramento one day and helping to uplift that city and to uplift his finances further. So I'm curious from your perspective, from both of you, to get like deep inside the passionate A's fans, where we're at there, because I don't totally have a grip on that situation.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code POD to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code POD at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code POD.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. See ebaymotors.com.
Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you sell everywhere, from their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system. Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. What I love about Shopify is how no matter how big you want to grow, Shopify gives you everything you need to take control and take your business to the next level. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/westwood1, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/westwood1 now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/westwood1.
It's interesting. We've had this discussion, Alex and I. So Alex, you should start off. You should go for it.
Well, yeah, I've after talking to some A's fans, like honestly, this conversation of how right field will kind of changed what I was thinking. I thought it would be like a loss. I thought like if they left Oakland, it would be total loss. But you know, I was talking to Will, and right field Will, he's like super diehard A's fan. He still goes to games every. Now they'll pan out. He'll be like the only guy out there now in section 149. But he was like, you know what? I'll still go to games up if they're up in Sacramento. He's like, I'll never step foot in that stadium in Vegas, but I'll go to that game in Sacramento. So I was kind of like looking to Will for guidance. And I don't know. I feel like it would be a softer landing in Sacramento, you know? And I think there is a lot of truth to what you're saying about Vivek. I think he's looking at Fisher and being like, yo, if he fumbles this deal, they're already in Sacramento, and I have, you know, a place where I can, you know, build a new stadium. And, you know, I think there's some truth to that. And, you know, in the Vegas, I think in July, we'll have a lot more clarity. They're expected to have that development agreement, but I was actually going to ask you too, what you thought about Sacramento or Vegas, but I think it's more likely they end up in Sacramento just because I think all this Vegas stuff is going to eventually fall apart, but we'll see, you know.
I think you talk to a ton of people, especially like, you know, the ride or die, like Oakland 68 guys, they say, you know, anything they would say like San Jose isn't good enough, you know? And that I understand that, right? Like Oakland's your city and that you're wanting to support your community, and Sacramento's not really your community. It's not really your city. I think the way that I view this is that like the A's fans are in such a terrible position, but we've done so much work to try and expose this nonsense. We've raised tons of money to sue the state of Nevada. I don't know if that's having an effect. It might be having an effect on John Fisher's ability to get business partners. I don't know if the fact that John Fisher looks like a complete and utter putz is affecting his ability to get investors. It might be, you know, but we've done those things. If it results in the A's sort of being stranded in Sacramento, I don't think anyone would be happy with the A's continued to be owned by John Fisher in Sacramento. I think that that's sort of like a bad situation. But if they are in Sacramento and there's an ownership change, and obviously the hope is maybe Oakland could get them back, but even if they end up in Sacramento full-time with a different owner, to me, I have to look at all of our, you know, all of the fellow fans, you know, this entire fandom, and saying, you helped this happen, you know, and a good compromise leaves both parties aggrieved. So, in some sense, you just like take your wins where you can get them. And I think that that's a win. I wouldn't be super like in love with it and happy with it, but you know, in some sense it's a win. And I don't want to speak for the entire culture of Oakland, but I think in a lot of sense, the culture of Oakland is, you know, in we're not San Francisco kind of thing, you know? So you talked about the Nets moving to Brooklyn. Where, yes. Like, I think like the whole thing of like New Jersey is we're not New York, right? But they're moving to New York. Oakland, Alex, you know, correct me if I'm wrong, but like, I don't feel like that the culture of Oakland is we're not Sacramento as much, you know, where it's like, okay, we'll go there. I don't think, you know, I think for a lot of people, it won't feel like they're, you know, that they're theirs anymore. But there's also a ton of, you know, there's a ton of A's fans out in the, you know, in the East, you know, in the East Bay suburbs and stuff, where at that point, you know, you're almost to Sacramento anyway. So absolutely, I think that would be a win. The thing with Vivek that just drives me nuts is what you brought up there was when we were first organizing, I think about a year ago, I remember being on a conference call with three or four people who were like from the fan group of the Kings, you know, and they have a fan group that's less militant than the Oakland 68s. But, you know, there
is
are
Crown Downtown. There, is it that one?
Yeah, I don't know if it was them or somebody else, yeah. But you know, there are also communist autocracies that are less militant than the Oakland 68s. So they were on the phone with us and they were, you know, sharing their experience and how they what they found was most, you know, helpful to fight back. And, you know, in many senses, they felt like allies at the time. And I'm not saying that they did this, right? Like the people of Sacramento didn't do this. It was Vivek. And Vivek is he's from Silicon Valley. He's not from Sacramento. You know, he's from Palo Alto or something, right? Like he only is there because that was the team for sale. So, you know, he's there because they needed, you know, the city of Sacramento needed a billionaire to buy the team and save the team. And, you know, all I can say is like, this is the problem is when you require billionaires to be the people who save your team, you know, the sign says sell to who? To, I don't know, to some fucking billionaire. Like, not me. I can't afford it. But
Joe
you
know,
the, yeah, sure, right?
I mean, I don't know him that well, but I guarantee you he would do a better job than John Fisher would do. And I could probably come up with, you know, most names in the country that would do a better job, right? So, yes, yeah. I agree, right? It's not like we're going to suddenly take over the Oakland A's, but there are many other more viable.
Yeah, candidates. Yeah. No, I'm just saying, like, you know, it's so frustrating to think like that the Kings fans went through this and now that they're sort of stealing our team, but it's just some billionaire Vivek, you know, who buys the team. And I'm sure he's a good businessman and I'm sure he's a much better operator than John Fisher. John Fisher would never give anyone free rent. So like, obviously, but it definitely has left a sour taste, I think in my mouth. But I get it. Like, you know, the people of Sacramento want their own team. Everyone deserves their own team. Yeah, I'm a big proponent of, I think that the best system is, you know, promotion relegation like they have in Europe. You know, I think everybody should have, you know, each city should have their own professional team that has a chance of making it, you know? So I don't begrudge the people of Sacramento for being excited about it. I don't begrudge the people of Las Vegas for being excited about it. Although I do wonder how many of them actually exist, but or at least excited about John Fisher.
Well, that's the problem, right? Yeah, so I'll try and put the global perspective back on it.
Yeah, yeah.
The fact that baseball wants to have a team in Las Vegas is smart. Of course. It's not about that, right?
Yeah.
If we were talking right now and nothing was going on with Oakland and they were owned by a normal, non-poisonous human being with no soul. And then suddenly in the news, it popped up, hey, there's two new teams that are going to be in Major League Baseball. It's Nashville and Vegas. We'd be like, cool, that's fun. They're going to have a team there. The problem here is not even just that this situation is happening in Oakland and he is moving it to Las Vegas and he is doing that with a purpose and kicking everyone in the face as he's doing it. It's not just that. It's that we have the worst steward in the sport by far, taking a product to a place that is tough to impress. Las Vegas is a complicated market. They can withstand and they can support an MLB team, but can they stand an owner like that? Can they support a team that operates in this way? They're not suddenly going to wake up and change, right? People change. This process is not going to change well enough that it's going to look like a successful project in Las Vegas. The only way that looks good is if Fisher eventually does this and the franchise value went up and he didn't have to pay a relocation fee, which blows my mind, but he ends up doing all of this and then he sells the team. If he does that and someone else takes over and they do a great job with it, then Las Vegas is in better shape, right? But that's my point is, okay, like let's take a step back for a moment. We have the worst face of the entire sport and one of the worst sports owners of all time who doesn't know baseball, who is hated by all fans, who has caused absolute uproar in one city, who everybody knows about, no matter which team you root for. He is the guy that is going to introduce one of the entertainment capitals of the world to baseball. That is such a joke. You can insert a million analogies, right? For, you know, it makes no sense for bringing someone like this to actually try and spark baseball fever in Las Vegas. That's one thought. The other thought I wanted to drop in there was from the Northeast side of growing up, we don't view cities the same way. Maybe I'm wrong on this, but growing up in New Jersey, you have some teams in New Jersey and then you have some teams in New York. Things blend a lot, if that makes sense. I feel like there's a little bit more of a territory situation, right? Like, yeah, we're Oakland, we're not San Francisco. I get that, right? Like there's, especially in New York, like you might live in Queens, you're a Mets fan, you're in the Bronx, you're a Yankees fan generally. But like if you live in New Jersey, are you a Yankees fan or a Mets fan? You don't have a team in New Jersey. And that's okay. Nobody in New Jersey is like, we need our own team. They're like, no, we drive to the Bronx or to Queens and we go to games there. So it's a little bit different. I guess the Nets connection, like I brought up earlier, that just felt different. And for some, if the Nets moved to Manhattan, maybe it would be different. I don't know. I mean, I have a place now in Brooklyn. So I love Brooklyn. I'm in the Bushwick area half the year. So it's interesting though. I don't know. I feel like the connection in the Northeast is different from the connection out West. Like, I don't know how fans would feel if suddenly they had a team that was moving somewhere else that was a little bit further away, but still wasn't like a place that they're disconnected to, right? Like if you're a Jets or a Giants fan, they're called the New York Jets and the New York Giants. They are in solid New Jersey. Yeah. And everyone's like, whatever. They're called that because of marketing, sure. And you can be a Jets or a Giants fan living in New York or New Jersey or even parts of Pennsylvania if you're not an Eagles or a Steelers fan, right? Like depending on how close you are. If those two teams suddenly moved to somewhere that's an hour away, you know, from there, like in Central Jersey or, you know, somewhere else that was kind of irrelevant, I think people would just be like, oh, well. So it's just different. That's why I'm always curious to get the perspective from you guys, because obviously I just want Howard Terminal, makes all the sense in the world, know all about that, purposely, you know, quiet quitting against that for years. But I like to get the perspective, like, is this a consolation prize at all? Or are we like totally out?
Yeah, I've come. I used to think it was totally out, but now I'm kind of coming across to it. And it's like, if you really love them, you know, it's 90 minutes up the road. It's not too bad. So
right. Not a flight.
Yeah. And one last thing before we let you go, I know we got some afternoon or got some evening games here. We're recording on Thursday afternoon, and actually while we've been recording, Mason Miller has given up 5 runs, and 3 of them were earned. Isn't that crazy? Yeah. So it was some baseball history, but I was gonna just from your perspective, do you think Miller, Abraham Toro, Brent Rooker, do you think these guys are gonna last through the end of the season? Do you think these guys get traded, or? I think arbitration doesn't hit until 26. And I think Rooker might be in the same kind of boat, but I mean, do you think these guys are gone? What's the shelf life for these guys? You know,
crazy. It's tough to predict. At first, like, we'll focus on Miller because that's the one that we see all the time in our chat and comments from fans on Foul Territory, and they all send in the same thing. Miller's a Brave. Yeah. Miller's a Dodger.
Miller's a Yankee. Yeah.
Yeah. Can't wait to see him in pinstripes, blah, blah, blah. And when we first started talking about that and just answering fan questions, I was like, why would the A's trade the show that costs them nothing, right? Yeah. He costs nothing. He's on a league minimum salary. He's not making even $1 million a year as the best closer in baseball or one of. So he draws people to a ballpark that obviously is having trouble for good reason. And when you're there, he is the show. When you're on TV watching there, he is the show, right? You're hoping that you Absolutely. Get to the ninth. He doesn't play every day, so it's different from a position player. So I'm like, that would make no sense. Plus, the only thing that John Fisher has promised to his cronies, his other owners in baseball, is that he is going to invest in the team and in players, and he's going to spend more. And he gave them kind of like a timeline of how much he'll spend. So you add all of that up, and you're like, is he just going to continue to tank? Why would he do that? I mean, his friends that are sticking up for him would be like, dude, what is the plan here? The other side of all of this is Mason Miller's so good and he's had an injury history. Do the A's try and capitalize, right? Forget about Fisher for a sec. Do they make a presentation to him, you know, Forrest and Bean and company, and say, hey, the Orioles are offering us two prospects that could be stars. What are we supposed to do? These guys could help you have a successful franchise that doesn't cost much. The Orioles were a perfect model of that for a while under John Angelos, who was probably the second worst owner in Major League Baseball. So all things to keep in mind. So to answer your question, I could see Toro getting dealt if he continues this up, because I think he's only on a one-year deal. That one makes a lot more sense. Yeah. Miller and Rooker are more complicated. If I had to make a decision, I would say no. I would say they stay at least for this year.
All right. All right.
I feel like you got to, you know, you also don't know what you have with him still, because people say he could be a starter, and you.
He went on MLB Network. He said he wanted to be. I mean, he's pitched.
If you can get him to be a starter.
Oh my God. He's just tied it up in the bottom of the 11th. They just scored four runs, dude. JJ Blade just hit a 2-run homer. Sorry.
I picked the wildest day of the year.
No, I know. Sorry. Yeah. Well, it got to the bottom of the ninth. I was like, oh, they're in extra innings. I guess we'll just start recording the pod. But holy shit. Yeah. Okay. All right. I kind of want to actually clip some highlights and stuff like that. I gotta get this out.
As you should go get after it.
And but yeah, hey Scott, thank you so much, man. I really, really appreciate it, man. Make sure to go check out Scott's stuff on YouTube, and where you get your podcast at Foul Territory TV. Does a great job with that. And yeah, good luck with everything this season, man. Thanks a lot.
Thank you guys. Great to talk to you both. Appreciate it.
You know when you're listening to a true crime story that has an unbelievable plot twist that makes you stop in your tracks? That's what our podcast, People Are the Worst, brings you with each episode. I'm Rachel.
And I'm Rebecca. We're identical twins who love true crime cases that make you say, didn't see that coming, and we hate the people responsible for them. Listen to People Are the Worst now on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.